it is a register that has been created.
Sorry, Advocate Kambula, we can't see you. We're only seeing your hair. If you can adjust your video so that we can see your face.
I'm not sure if it is right now.
Yes, it is.
I don't know this thing. Okay, thank you. All right, so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Our presentation will be covering the number of areas that are, these are the thematic areas for our presentation. But first is to say to the chairperson that as a department, we welcome this opportunity of sharing with Parliament and also be able then to assist in the decision-making process of the Parliament in areas of the functionalities of the National Register for Sex Offenders, and also highlighting then the successes as well as the challenges that we are currently experiencing in ensuring the effective management of the register. So first then we're going to be dealing with the background and also the powers, the duties, the functions of the registrar as prescribed by the Act, the goals of the NRSO, and also the function, how the National Register functions, and also the issues of resourcing, as the letter has requested us to touch on, as well as the challenges and the successes in the management of the register. So as I said, it is a creation of a statute. In Section 42 of the Act, it states that a National Register for sex offenders containing particulars of persons convicted of any sexual offense against a child or a person who is mentally disabled or alleged to have committed a sexual offense against a child of a person who is mentally disabled and who have been dealt with in terms of Section 77, Subsection 6, 78, Subsection 6 of the Criminal Procedure Act, whether committed before or after the commencement of this chapter, and whether committed in or outside the Republic, must within 6 months after the commencement of this chapter, in accordance with the provisions of this chapter and the regulations made thereunder, be established and maintained by the Minister. This is a provision that actually establishes the NRSO. As we see from it, then it actually states that it is a register then that registers the current convictions as well as the historic convictions, and it also requires then that there be registrations of people who are the nationals. Convicted sex offenders as well as people from the foreign jurisdictions. So as you see from the next slide is actually, let me try and take out here, sorry. From this slide, we see that the register, these are the powers, the duties and the functions of the registrar. So the registrar is expected to receive data from the courts, that is all courts. And when I talk about all courts, then we're talking about the 405 regional courts that we have in the country, which include the 106 sexual offenses courts that are operational right now, as well as the 332 periodical courts. 11 high courts with 5 local seats. And then it also receives the data from SAPS, and from SAPS it is historic data, which we have actually received from SAPS. And also, the Act also requires then a DCS to also provide us with the historic data. And we have just received the historic data from DCS, which is 18,000 historic data that we recently received from them. And it also then requires the Department of Health to provide us with historic data. But this is one department chairperson that indicated to us that in terms of the data required by the NRSO, their system is unable to give us the particulars that are required, because it is not fashioned in a way that will be able to give us the specifics that are required in terms of the NRSO. And then we also receive data. We are supposed to be receiving data from the Department of Home Affairs, but thus we have not yet started the process with the Department of Home Affairs. It is because that it took us too long for us to be able to achieve data purity. And I will be able in this presentation to state to the chairperson as to what were the challenges that we experienced. And also then to be able to register the foreign jurisdictions, meaning that, convictions received from the foreign countries. So it's one area that we have not yet started with it, because we are waiting for us to be able then to achieve the data purity. So the NRSO also receives, is also responsible in terms of the Act. The Act gives the registrar the duty to receive applications, to process the applications for clearance, that is from the employees, from the employers, as well as the licensing authorities, applicants for license to operate businesses that involve children and persons with mental disabilities, from applicants, people who are applying for foster care grants, kinship, caregivers, adoptive parents, and curators. The NRSO is also empowered by the Act to also remove certain particulars of the sex offenders who are already in the register, that is in terms of the eligibility requirements set by the Act. So there are a number of requirements that then in terms of the removal of the offenders that must be considered. And in terms of the bill, those periods have been tightened. For instance, what I can say is that the Act also indicates that it actually prohibits persons who have been convicted and sentenced to a term of imprisonment without the option of the fine for a period exceeding 18 months, or who have a criminal record of two or more convictions of sexual offenses that involve children and persons with mental disabilities. Those in terms of the Act cannot be removed from the National Register for Sex Offenders. And so it is also then the responsibility of the registrar to maintain data integrity and also confidentiality, because the Act also has a provision of confidentiality that actually restricts the NRSO from sharing information outside the requirements and the information that is speculated by the Act, to say that these are the people who should be getting this information, and they should be getting this information in terms of the applications that they be making to the NRSO. And also then it is the responsibility of the NRSO to ensure that by managing the registrar, it is also contributing to the reduction of sex crimes in the country, and also the prevention of recidivism. in cases that relate to sexual offences and involving children and persons with mental disabilities. As you know, Chairperson, the bill now is actually extending the scope of the victims that ought to be protected by the NRSO. So the goals of the NRSO is to provide a national repository of convicted sex offenders, and these are the sex offenders currently that have committed sex crimes involving children and persons with mental disabilities. And it is also intended to protect that category from pedophilia. It also prevents recidivism by national and international sex offenders. It reduces also, it is intended then to reduce the sex crimes against the targeted, the limited targeted persons, so that is children and persons with mental disabilities, so that is currently in terms of the Act. Now, coming to how the National Register functions, as I have said, that it is the national repository for convicted sex offenders, that is in cases involving children and persons with mental disabilities. And the purpose for the NRSO and for the country actually to establish this register, it was in following the trend of other countries, so that then we are able then to determine the magnitude of these crimes and be able to do the profiling of the victims as well as of the offenders. And it is an electronic register, and in the department then we had to develop the integrated case management system for the NRSO, and it was established in 2009, so as to comply with the Act and ensure that we do not have a manual register, but an electronic register. It also then, it receives the data, as I said, from the courts and other sources, and it is a system that is able then to analyze the data for compliance with the requirements of the Act. And I would like to say, Chairperson, that it took us a bit of time for the system to be upgraded so that it has that functionality of analyzing the data. It also provides the national statistics of sex offenders in the country and can be used for sex offender profiling, as I have said. We provided data to SAPS as part of the DNA database in terms of the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Act of 2013. What it means is that as we have the NRSO, and we are working very closely with SAPS in terms of data sharing. And it also regulates then the data confidentiality and also provides a section that criminalizes disclosure thereof that is contrary to the Act. So meaning that then if the registrar discloses information contrary to the specifications of the Act and the requirements as set by the Act, then he or she can be charged and be prosecuted. It also then provides then a vetting of certain persons and entities and also businesses and permits, also the removal of certain registered sex offenders, that is after the expiry of certain periods of time. It also serves as a data source for consideration of applications for expungements of records made by convicted sex offenders in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Now, in terms of the resources, because currently, you know, from the time that the NRSO was established in 2009, we have been struggling as in the department to resources so that it is able then to operate optimally. Now, we have actually now developed a resource plan. So as this So the establishment of the office of the registrar, then will be, that is the plan, is will be progressively rolled out to all 9 provinces. So because right now its operation is still centralized, and thus is a challenge, is a big challenge, particularly in terms of a service delivery and also us enable us to deliver in high volumes. So there is also the need for the provision of additional human capital and tools of trade, and we also need to ensure that the costing, because I'm going to be sharing the costing, there's already a costing that has already been done. And the issue then of the office space, we checked it according to the costing, and we found that then we have sufficient office accommodation. The challenges that we have are the people to occupy those offices. Now, here is the resource costing that the department has done. As you see then, that you will see that the compensation is quite high, and for this financial year, in terms of the costing, we are supposed to be having 11.6 million, so as to secure the capacity of human capital that is required then to execute the services of the NRSO, and that totals to an amount of 35 million spread over the period of 3 years. The department, in mitigating this budget, has made a resolution to take a certain officials who are in branches that are overpopulated, so that they are transferred to the NRSO. It is a process that our HR has actually started to embark on. So if you see then from this slide, we also need there are operational costs that we need, and also the assets that we also require, that I will explain in the next slide. So this is our resource plan to implement the extended scope of the NRSO. We will, of course, need to upgrade the electronic register, and so that then it includes more variables. And these are the variables then that will be accommodating also the extended scope of crimes that have been that are introduced by the bill. So the upgrading of the NRSO then will require resources. But then we are in partnership with IJS, and IJS has put this exercise in their annual performance plan. And it has been their chairperson for consecutive years, I think starting from 2016, 2017, IJS has been assisting the department to upgrade, progressively upgrade the NRSO. So they will be moving on, and I will be presenting on the work that they will be doing to upgrade the NRSO further, so as to capacitate it in terms of accommodating the extended scope of the NRSO as proposed by the bill. So we will need the technical resources, the computers, the scanners, printers, so the department has recently approved a tender for laptops and desktops. So we have been promised that we'll be able then to get those resources. So of course then there's a huge a need for additional human resources for NRSO, and also the decentralization of the NRSO services. For as long as it is centralized, we won't be able to meet then the demands that come from the from the society. And so what our HR has already done, a web study investigation for the NRSO, a permanent structure has already been conducted. The micro study now will be submitted then to the Minister of Public Service so that we are able then to get the concurrence. And then HR has also then started then the process of shifting personnel from overpopulated branches to NRSO. It's a process that they have started to do, but it has not yet, we have not yet have those resources in the NRSO, but then it's a process that has already been started. Then of course we'll need then to train a number of personnel, especially the ones that will be migrated from other branches to the NRSO, so that they are trained on the operations, the issues of confidentiality, data integrity, and also and how to manage the system. And so this will mean that then the module that we already have for the NRSO will then have to be amended so that it incorporates the changes introduced by the bill. And this process, I can say to you, Chairperson, that Justice College has already been engaged to assist with this process. Now, coming to the challenges, I would like first to say that when we started implementing the NRSO, that was in June 2009, we started with the system, and we had, at the beginning, we experienced challenges, but these teething challenges escalated over time to an extent that when we got to 2016-2017, there were actually flooding the system and making it impossible for us to say as a department that we have data that we could be using and actually starting with other functions that are required in terms of the NRSO, like the vetting and the removal. So the fact that we were struggling with cleaning up our data, and this was a challenge that was introduced by the integration of the ICMS, that is the register, the electronic register, with the criminal ICMS, that is the integrated case management system. And the purpose for that was to ensure that then the criminal integrated case management system is a portal of all cases, all criminal cases that are heard by all courts in the country. So the integration was to assist then the NRSO to be able to extrapolate the relevant data from the criminal and from the criminal integrated management system. And what happened was that the criminal system, that is the criminal portal, was transferring the data of the NRSO, did not have the functionalities of averting that contamination that was coming from the criminal portal. So it ended up then having a system that had data that was not reliable. So we had to come up with measures, and very strict measures. First, we started by cleaning up the data, and we realized that if we clean up the data but not dealing with the root causes, and the root causes were basically in the system, not having the proper variables and the functionalities that will be able to block unnecessary data that is coming from the criminal portal. So then a decision was taken, which was a hard decision by the department, to stop the NRSO for a period of a year, so that then we have a complete overhaul of the system. so that we root out all the deficiencies that were the underlying causes for the impurity of the data. So the challenges that now we are having right now are the inadequate human capital, which is as I said that it is a challenge, but it is a challenge that the department is currently handling, and the centralization of the functions of the NRSO really impact on the current volume of the work production, as I have already indicated, that for as long as we have a register that is managed at national, then what it means is that then people in the regions then will be struggling, because especially those who are in rural communities to access the services of the national register. So it's very important then that we decentralize these services and ensure that they go to all our courts, that is the regional courts and also the sexual offenses courts, and so that then people are able to access these services. And also the need then for the systems upgrade, because since the time that we had the National Register, that is the electronic, it has been periodically upgraded. But now what we can say is that we have reached a stage now, the final upgrade was done in 2019. And in 2019, it was that upgrade that then took us to the complete overhaul of the system that then included all the variables that we are able then to say that then with the data that we are having, it is actually the pure data that we could use. Now let me come to the successes achieved since 2009. This slide is actually showing the progressive upgrades of the electronic register. As we see there in the first bar, is that we started with just a few variables where the system was registering the offender, that is in terms of the current convictions as well as the historic data that we have received from SAPS and also the one that now we have currently received from the corrections. So it was able then to search the offender and also to remove and approve the offender. So very limited variables. And as we move on then with the system, then we moved to the next upgrade. And I have excluded other upgrades, but just mentioned the ones that are major. So then we moved then to introduce variables that will be identifying the new cases, scheduling the new cases, identification of the historical data from the new convictions, and also be able then to register those cases that are non-SAPS docket cases, and also then we were able then to be able to link into the court roll system and also to register then the we had also the variable for the clearance certificate added, and also the one for the removal of the offenders. Then in 2019 it was further upgraded, as you see there. So the upgrades then were actually dealing also with the deficiencies that we experience in the management of the data, so as to ensure that then we have a system that averts contamination from our criminal portal, so that any case then that is in the criminal portal that does not qualify in terms of the requirements of eligibility for registration in terms of the NRSO is kicked out from the system. And also then to be able for those cases that are in the criminal portal, which is something that was also introduced by the 2019 upgrade, that if we have a case that is in the criminal portal that qualifies in terms of the requirements of registration in the register, and the magistrate inadvertently, you know, omitted to issue the order of registration, So then the system now will alert the National Register of that case, so that the National Register then is able to connect with a particular court and have and bring the details of that case to the particular court, so that the prosecutors now working with the magistrate are able then to issue the order, so that we do not have people who are supposed to be in the register and are not registered. So it's also another functionality that is quite new that has been introduced by the latest upgrade. Now, as I said, that it has been progressively upgraded. It has been in the APP of IJS for a couple of years now, financial years. And there are still other upgrades that are planned by IJS for 2021-2022. And so in 2021, this is what IJS, working with DOJ and also our ISM, that is the unit that is responsible for IT, for the development of systems and IT solutions. So there will be, in this financial year, we'll be upgrading the NRSO further to align it with the current changes proposed by the bill. So they will be focusing on expanding the scope of the sexual offences, because currently the NRSO is aligned to all the sexual offences that are created by the Act, that is in the three chapters that created the offences. I think it's chapter two, chapter three, and chapter four. So it has all those offences, and also the other common law offences that are still recognised. And so now, with the bill introducing more crimes, so we'll be able then to incorporate those crimes. And secondly, then which is going to be the major project, this one, is the creation of the platform for the decentralization of the functions of the regions, of the functions to the regions. So this is to ensure that now we introduce access to the regions to the NRSO, to the register, so that they are able then to execute the functions of the NRSO, but then ensuring that it is still the NRSO then that will be checking the issues of compliance, so as to ensure that we don't have inaccuracies in the management of the NRSO, so as to attract unnecessary civil actions. So phase two then, which is a phase that, as I was talking with the people who are systems developers in the development yesterday, in the department yesterday. So they also indicated that in phase two, then that they are looking at a process of integration of the NRSO with SAPS and also with the Department of Home Affairs through the IJS Transversal Hub. So this is what they will be doing then in phase two. IJS already has the transversal hub as a foundation. So it is an information and messaging platform that is already in operation between the criminal justice system stakeholders, that is including, as you can see there from the screen, DOJ is part of the hub, then NPA, SAPS, Legal Aid South Africa, Correctional Services, Home Affairs, SASA, Social Development, and also the office of the Chief Justice is in the planning of being included in the transversal hub. So this is where then the different departments are able to share the information. And I might also say, Chairperson, that it is also this transversal hub that that the department is also using to develop the femicide watch, as we are required, as we have been requested by UN to do so. So it is this hub then that they will be able then to integrate the system of the NRSO with SAPS as well as with the Department of Home Affairs, as that is in phase one of, or in part one of phase two of the process. So then moving on then with other stakeholders that are required in terms of providing services for the NRSO, that is providing information for the NRSO. Now, the other successes that the NRSO has achieved in 2018, we finalized the data cleanup, as I have said. But then we realized that because this is a project that started in 2017, and 2018, then it was called the data cleanup project. That is in 2017, 2018. But then we realized that we will be taking a symptomatic approach to our data cleanup process. And then we decided then in 2018 to do the overhaul of the NRSO and to stop the processes of the NRSO. The only functionality of the NRSO that was operating in 2018, it was the registration of the new convictions that are coming from the courts. So the other functionalities were completely suspended. And this, it is from this process then that sort of gave us a turnaround in terms of the data quality of the NRSO. For the very, very first time, we were able then to say that we have data integrity. We have achieved data integrity in the NRSO. That was in 2019. So the register, as I have said, it registers the current and the historic convictions. I may also say, Chairperson, that in terms of the historic conviction, we experience serious challenges of getting data. And we'll be getting data that we'll find that it is not compliant, and the process of purifying that data, it was quite, it was quite an exercise that really took a lot of resources from the department in ensuring that we maintain the data purity. And also it is the historic convictions that also contributed then in the contamination of the data quality of the NRSO. So we received the historic conviction, as I have said, from SAPS and the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Health. As I said, that they could not give us the historic convictions, and then we got the historic convictions from corrections just recently, which are 18,000 that were in the process of working on them to purify them. Now, we also then from November 2019, NRSO was included in the Emergency Response Action Plan that was spearheaded by the presidency, so that we are able then to issue the clearance certificate. So from the period November 2019, because the ERAP started in November 2019 and ended on the 31st of March 2020. So during that process, that period, we processed 12,157 certificates, that is the clearance certificates. And these were clearance certificates issued for our personnel in our courts. We started with our people because it was the time, the very first time for us to issue clearance certificates, because we could not issue clearance certificates when our data was still contaminated. So then we issued clearance certificate to our intermediaries at the court, our family advocates, clerks of maintenance courts, maintenance officers, clerks of the children's courts, and all those officials that are having the direct contact with children. We also included prosecutors to a certain extent, and also processed the applications that we received from SAPS. And then during the COVID period, we received and processed 3,919 certificates. And this, it was also because of the stop and goes that we experienced during COVID-19. And also we experienced during this period a decline in the capacity of the NRSO in terms of the human resources. So this performance then is of course expected to change with the current process of the human resource capacitation of the office of the NRSO and the planned decentralization of the NRSO functions to the regions. This is, and then secondly, we were able then, as that is upon us then achieving data integrity to start then the process of removing the particulars of the qualifying registers as sex offenders. And up to now, we have removed 1,573. I would also like to say to the chairperson that any person who has been sentenced to a term of imprisonment without an option of a fine for a period exceeding 18 months cannot be removed from the NRSO. So what it means is that we, in terms of removals, there are very few people who can be removed from the NRSO because of that limitation. And now with the bill now trying then to tighten up the provision of the removal of the provision in the act that relates to the removal of the particulars of the sex offenders, then the numbers will of course not be as high as one will be expecting because of those restrictions. So it's not easy for a person to be removed from the NRSO. And the applications that we received were quite high, but then it is only those, that is the 1,573 thus far, who qualified to be removed from the NRSO register. And the register also, as I have said, that we have succeeded to achieve the data accuracy and also improve a performance to a certain extent, because we cannot say that we have a register that is free from hassles. We are still experiencing such. Now, as I said, that as a department, we have already overcome many hurdles of starting and managing the NRSO, and those were the teething challenges that we experienced. And the NRSO is already established, and it is kept in an electronic format as required by the Act, and it is within the infrastructure of the Department of Justice, which then facilitates the easy connection and the direct connection to the courts, which are the biggest data sources for the NRSO. As I have said, that it is actually about 1,000 courts that are feeding into the NRSO. That is in terms of the current convictions. And DOJ, working with IJS, we have already invested millions of rands in the periodical upgrades of the NRSO. So it took us a lot of budget to take us to where we are. As I'm saying that we got our breakthrough just recently, that is in 2019. And then DOJ also we have also established procedures and also there are policies in place for the administration and the management of the NRSO. And these These are the prescripts then that we have shared with the data capturers and that at our courts and the disciplines as to how they should be managing the entries into the register. Because there was a time when we were experiencing the incorrect entries that were entered by our data capturers at the court, and it led us then to embarking into a training program that was going straight to the data capturers at the court and sort of developing that capacity so that they are able then to know the disciplines concerning data accuracies, maintaining data accuracies. Then, as I have said, that we are issuing clearance certificates, and our process is a free service. And in terms of the Act, it must be done within 10 days. And this is a timeline that is quite tight. And in the previous APP, that is, no, this is the current one, that is the 2020-2021, we're measured in terms of this standard, and it is a standard that then the NRSO was able to achieve. And the provision is also then, we are also the primary purpose and the object of the NRSO is victim-centric in the sense that it is intended. A scope of the NRSO, then it will be able then to provide that protection to the broader spectrum of the victims of sexual offences, which is one thing that the country needs at this time. So the NRSO is also intended then to protect children and persons with mental disabilities from paedophilia, as I have said, that is the pedophiles that are in the country and those who are entering the country. And it is a national repository that can also be used to profile the sex offenders and so as to help then the country to have a more responsive and impactful programs and to assist them in bringing down the levels of sexual violence in the country. Because it is important when you are dealing with issues of gender-based violence to know as to be able then to have those research studies there so that you are able to know the behavior of the sex offenders or of the perpetrators of GBVF. So this repository then will be assisting in that. And I would like also to say, Chairperson, that We have because I'm chairing Pillar 3 of the NSP, the National Strategic Plan, the GBVF Strategic Plan. So we have received a request from the civil society to say that they would like to use this national repository to assist them in research initiatives so that then they are able then to do the profile of the sex offenders and also the profile of children and also to be able to get then the numerals of children who have been victimized sexually in the country. So if this is a system then that will be able to assist in this regard. So, and it is also then the primary data source then in terms of the capturing of the data relating to sexual offences involving children and persons with mental disabilities. So the NRSO also carries an indicator on the gender-based violence and femicide national strategic plan, and we are reporting performance to the presidency on monthly basis via the Department of Women. And the NRSO system then of course will require an update to include the newly proposed crimes, as I have said, and also the new data variables. And this is also something that has already been planned by IJS for the next financial year. So the fact that the bill extends the scope of protection to all victims of sex crimes, irrespective of age, will actually make the process of data capturing easy for the department, since all convictions of sex crimes will be eligible for entry into the register. We had a challenge that is prior 2019 of the system, as I have said, that there will it was unable. You will have instances where you find that victims, adult victims, will be appearing in the NRSO, and that was because of the monitoring functionalities that were missing in the NRSO, so as to pick out all the cases that are non-compliant. So, but now with the new functionalities that has been included, and also the variables now post 2019. We are not having that kind of that scenario. So the NRSO then has also been upgraded, as I have said, to detect cases where the court has inadvertently omitted to make an order of entry into the register. So this functionality ensures that no convicted sex offender is not registered in the country. So as I'm ending, Chairperson, I would like just to note to the committee that we, with this register, we are still at a stage where we are saying that we are beginning to gain the momentum. So our experience is, I would say that we have a huge experience of what is not working. And when you talk about the national register, you are talking about a system. So it is something that cannot be corrected by lawyers. It is something that we as a department reliant on our IT people. It's a system. So as a system, then it is a system that is operating, unfortunately, on a space that is fraught with rapid changes, the technological environment. It moves at a high speed. So hence the numerous upgrades that we have experienced. And also, I would like also to say that to ensure that then it is strengthened further. It is the NRSO IJS has also included, and ISM have also included the NRSO in the justice modernization and digitization engineering program that the department has started, so as to ensure that then we move from a process of having this register accessible to certain people, but ensuring that there's a broader access and there's easy access, and it can also be accessed remotely, so that we are able then to provide the remote services to our people. That is what is intended by this program. So, with the permission of the chairperson, as advocate Kosana has said, that the NRSO is also with us, so she is available then to take through the committee into the processes and what is it that she does when she removes a person from the register, when she attends to the applications for the clearance certificate and all that. So I am requesting then the chairperson just to give her maybe 5 minutes so that she's able to inform the committee as to how that is executed.
We will do that, but I'm concerned that you have taken a lot of time, Advocate Ngambule. Over to her.
Ms. Magina.
Yes, good afternoon, Advocate Kambula. Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm logged in as MN Nechisawuru as I've been experiencing connection glitches. I'll start with the processing of an application. What actually happens is when the court makes an order on that spot, the Act provides that the magistrate or the judge must make an order, and which order must conform to a form which we call a Form 5. Like when that order is made in the presence of an accused person where the court explains the consequences of it making an order and also telling him or her that the consequences of making such an order, it means you will not have access to children or people who are mentally disabled in any manner or form. Like you will not even be able to work with those children or people who are, who've got mental disabilities. So as soon as that order is made and a sentence is made, the court clerk, after ascertaining that that particular order relates to a child, then they would include that in the ICMS Integrated Case Management System, which is linked to the nation. This is when, after they finalize the case on the CRIM side, on the criminal side, when they hit save and send to registrar, it will then arrive on my workspace, to which I will then be able to have to wait for the original documents of the court order for me to be able to approve it in the system to becoming active in the register. So this will then lead us to a process wherein we talk to removers. And this, I think, Advocate Kambula has already touched on, is that the people who have a sentence that exceeds 18 months, they may not have their names removed from the register, or those ones who have more than two convictions, their names may not be removed from the register. But those ones that have got is less than 18 months, the period varies from when you will have a person included in the register for 10 years. And this, in terms of the current a bill that is before Parliament, this particular period is doubled now to 20 years. We will also have those ones who were entitled to stay for 7 years, then they will then stay for 14 years. And the ones with a lesser sentence of less than 6 months sentence period, those ones will stay in the register for 5 years in the current dispensation. But when the bill is assented to, then the period they could actually be able to apply for removal. And again, we've got another process which deals with the application for clearance. The application for clearance, we have those that will apply, for example, for work purposes. There is a form that we call that is the Form 7, which on top it is written that is an application for a certificate in respect of own particulars, which means that gives access to a person who wants to ascertain in their own right whether or not the details are included in the register. We also have another one which is called application for a certificate on behalf of another. That one is, it uses a Form 8. This is being utilized like institutions like SAFE, which in actual fact will then want to ascertain if the current teacher who's applying to work at a school is included in the register or not. And this year, in this financial year, we have dealt quite a lot with applications that were coming from the South African Council of Educators, wherein they wanted to ascertain that the prospective teachers are included in the register or not. And the other one is the one where an already convicted and sentenced offender would want to apply to have their details removed in the register. This uses a form which we call that is a Form 10. Initially, what they will do, some of them will want to ascertain first if their name is included, they will use a Form 7. And then when they would want to use to apply for removal of their name from the register, they will use a Form 10. And then another form is the one which actually confirms whether or not the names or the details of a particular person are included in the register. And the other one which we then give out as a certificate is the one that confirms whether or not the details of a particular applicant are removed or not removed from the register. So I would leave it here, Chairperson, and then would entertain questions should they be asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me note hands from members. But before I do that, Advocate Kambule, I think you are well spoken. You choose your words very carefully. But I get the feeling that the problem is much deeper than the choice of words we have selected to deploy. The issue is whether in a state of emergency, like the pandemic as we have it now, we can trust that with all the challenges we have articulated, it would be ideal for us to transfer this this function to you in the short term. But I will hear other members as to how their questions are. But keep that in mind. Honorable Nico Drachens, Honorable Mfuke, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, Advocate Kambula, for the presentation. I agree with what Chairperson said. You're very careful with your words, but I do get the feeling that there's more to it. Right. Now, firstly, I wanted to say I'm happy that the Act will be amended to include people with other disabilities. I'm very worried that there's a lot of focus on only people with mental disabilities. And I have said that in previous meetings, so I'm not going to repeat what I said there. But I'm very pleased that it's going to be amended to include various disabilities because they are the most vulnerable. And it's not only people with mental disabilities, it does include others as well. Then it's a pity that I didn't see a schedule where, or a table to see where your NSRO offices are in the provinces with the amount of staff or the numbers of the staff. So there wasn't a table like we saw from SEPS. And I would have liked to see currently where you are now, instead of jumping to mentioning what you would need when the new act is enacted, when the new bill is enacted. So I can't see the in-between. So for example, slide 8 says, which will progressively include all 9 provinces. So I feel that because you are only national and you're not rolled out into provinces yet, but at the same time, I'm not sure if that is the case. And then also somewhere you said, finally it's working, but it's been there since 2009. So 11 years, you have been struggling to decentralize and get this working. so I can't really see if this has happened. Then you said you received 18,000 from DCS. So all along, it's only been 18,000. You mentioned historical data. So historical data goes back to as far as when? Until when does it go back? Does it mean this 18,000 is not on the register, which worries me, because this means that people can just disappear and not be omitted and not be placed on the register. So that wasn't very clear to me. And then you said that you are still in discussion with Department of Home Affairs and getting foreign embassies to get those criminals placed on record. I did ask in another meeting, and then the answer to that was yes, but you're saying that you're still in discussion. And is that the reason why pedophiles get away with it when they run to South Africa? Because they are not on the register yet. So our children are in danger from those people. You're saying that you're still in discussion, and that is quite worrisome to me. You said that somebody must qualify to get their name removed, but you didn't really explain what do they need to qualify for before their name can be removed from the NSRO. What are the requirements? So the particulars in terms of qualifying to get your name removed, I would like details in terms of that. And then I will leave it for there, Chair. My questions are all over the place. So maybe I can come back if Chair permits for a second round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Neville-Drachams. Honorable Mufuka.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, I really want to echo what you actually said, and I find it very, very difficult, as Honorable Neville-Drachams was saying, that there's a contradiction in a number of ways. And I'm one that didn't want to agree with some of my colleagues that said this National Register for Sexual Offences will be best placed with police. And I'm debating in my mind about this presentation, and you're correct. Advocate was very careful in choosing words, but some of us could read between the lines. I'll tell you one that was raised by Honorable Neville-Drachams, it's about the Home Affairs. The answer before was say yes, and now today they are saying they were supposed to receive the data. Then it means it didn't happen. So we still needed clarity on that. The other slide, I think slide 12, that was talking about the challenges of the management of a NRSO. Then I want to know where we are. Are we going to be able to achieve what we want? Because you look at phase one, phase two, the integrated process with SAPS and everything. Will it happen? And there's still a contradiction that SAPS doesn't talk about them integrating with the justice. And on the data that was contaminated, if it happened before, what is it that is going to make it better in the future? And all those organizations that are having hope in this National Register for Sexual Offenses, they're debating on public or not public, but they actually don't understand the deeper problems that we are in the process itself of getting it. Remember, we were told about this register last year, early, that it will be, in fact, not the register, the integrated justice system. And until now, it's still upgrade, the budget reserved. Really, for me, it's very, very difficult. The next one is that the clearance certificate with justice department is free. With police, you pay. Where are we? can systems talk to each other? And I want to know that if they are saying that according to the Act, they must deliver in 10 days, is there any backlogs now? And what does it do to them? Because, Chair, I still feel that we need a cleanup. The last official that actually spoke about the process, I think we would have started there, because the long, long thing that the advocate has done is appreciated with the whole program, with how they actually, the NSO works. But with communities there waiting for the GBV bills to be passed and what is going to happen with the processes, we don't want to see things that will end up in court to say that according to the NSO, it was not implemented at the time, it was not ready. Now I'm actually charged to be on that. We don't need that. But Chair, I must be honest with you, I'm not so convinced. I'm actually even very confused. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mfokeng. Honorable Ngora.
Thank you very much, Chair. A number of issues have been covered. Just two things. Which offender details that are contained in the register in its current form now? Two, have we been able to balance the provisions of the Protection of Personal Information Act and what we provide in the register? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngola. Advocate Skhosana, you said you wanted to make comments.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to your honorable members. And I wanted to comment before the questions were given, but I'll still make the question because I wanted to amplify and put into context some of the points which Advocate Gambula had raised. Chair, I think we come a long way with the register, and I think I'd wanted to indicate that we are not where we are supposed to be. So if the presentation wanted to make an impression that we have arrived where we should be, I'd wanted to allude to that point that we still have challenges. In the normal course of event, Chair, I think we would have had enough opportunity to take our new DG into confidence and in terms of what their plans are. And I think what Advocate Gambula has presented were only fairly, to be fair, the DG canvassed fully with him during the strategy planning session over the weekend in preparation of the final APPs to be presented and yesterday. And I think he made very telling interventions. For example, he when present the budget, he then indicated that the first call must be to identify areas where there's basically non-committed or non-involved officials and bring them here. All those are things which still have to be put in place. I think the greatest challenge which members would be aware of is that for many years we have had a very wrong delivery model. And I think the fact that information comes from the courts, costs thousands of them throughout the country, processes, matters, whatever, but we have not created a decentralized and devolved capability and capacity to deliver this on this aspect remains the biggest challenge. And I think we're still talking about the regional offices. We have to take the functions to the district offices in terms of BDM model, where we'll basically will start before we basically get finalized at the level of the register. So I just want to make the point that we are not where we are supposed to be, but I think the presentation should be taken as progress or as traction, which the department has tried to do since its the inclusion of the Act, but we are still far from where we are. And that's the point I want to make. It would be misleading to basically want to allude and convey to your members that we have done that. The second point, critical. I think IJS remain a very important integrator in this process. And I have listened to the presentation by SAPS. SAPS, Justice, Home Affairs are key parties in the IJS space. And I think What has been happening now from what I see of Gambola must basically be cascaded to all the chief departments. And once that happens, IJS, it will address both the subs, even the justice, whatever, regardless of where, who's basically finally gets uploaded with the responsibility. It will basically make a great sense to improve on the IJS. And I think it's one point which I just wanted to anchor. IJS is not where it's supposed to be. And I think in that we've always been called to account more accurately in terms of IJS. And I think when we come to portfolio committee IJS, I think we should be able to see how us and SAPS and Home Affairs are able to bring this particular aspect in terms of making sure that the information that we share is basically being used towards the same purpose that the registrar seeks to achieve. Thanks, Chair. But I'll allow my colleagues to answer the specifics, but I just wanted to convey that article up front. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Skhosana. Mamo Gambola. Advocate Gambola.
Thank you, Chair. I would like just to concur with what Advocate Skhosana is saying. We are far from achieving the effective data management of the NRSO. And I think that is what I was saying from the beginning of my presentation. It might have been lost somewhere. But that was my communication, that we are far. As I was saying, that we experience a lot of challenges with this register, starting from 2009. And I think that, as I would like also to repeat that, the major problem that actually contaminated the data, it was us then integrating the criminal portal that we have with the NRSO, so that there is a communication space between these two systems, so as to stop a process of having an individual entering information. So it must be, we wanted it to be a communication between a system and a system. But then the NRSO, what happened is that the NRSO was not adequately controlled, having control. I don't have these technical terminologies for the systems, but it did not have the enough functionalities to block, you know, data that is not supposed to come into it. So we experienced a huge contamination of data. But what I was communicating to...
Mamo Gambola. Sorry, Mamo Gambola. One thing that I think would also give us a good sense, do you take fingerprints? Is it based on fingerprints? Or you just take information from the system? Where is the process of the fingerprints in your system? Because in a criminal justice system, especially in this environment, that would be, for me, a big determiner.
The system has got the number. It does capture the number of the fingerprints, that dedicated number that is allocated for fingerprints, so as to ensure that we have accurate identity of the accused. It does have that variable. So it is information that is already built in the system that then the clerk from the court enters that number. So when it gets to the system and it does not have that information, the system kicks it back to the court so that we have that information. Because now we have done it in such a way that we do not have information or entries that have incomplete data, so as to confirm the entry of the sex offender in the register. So we are actually far. We are actually far from saying that we can run with the program. And I would say that we are actually far, but there is something, there's a milestone that we have achieved. and that milestone is coming from us doing the overhaul. What we did in 2018 has actually assisted us to have data purity. And that was the problem that made us not to issue clearance certificates, because you cannot issue clearance certificate whereas you don't have the data purity. And I would also like to say that, as Advocate Kosana was saying, that we are working. And the other thing that we did, which was quite really gave us a huge breakthrough, is to take our ISM, that is our IT and systems development in the department, and connect them with IJS, teaming them together so that they are able then to look into all the deficiencies that were in the system and do the complete overhaul. It actually assisted us, because now we have actually a system that we can say for the very first time. It is something that one could have said that it could have been done long time ago. But at the time that the system was put together, there was no baseline to help us to guide as what we need to do. So, but now answering the questions.
Before you move to answer the questions, my challenge is one. At this point, and I think you have in a way answered it correctly. At this point, we are not doing your normal oversight work to check the how the department or various components of the department are functioning. We are like surgeons in a theater. We are operating a person who is dying. And we are saying we want an exact appropriate tool to assist us to operate this person. Now, if we get to a normal functioning where the tool in the hospital is, it's not going to assist us. It's a specific, we are looking for specific kind of answers to be able to make a determination. We do appreciate, I think we are still going to call you and you take us through in our normal course of our oversight work. You take us through how you are doing this good work. I think we will call you, but we are in a state of emergency. We are asking these questions and wanting these answers to make a decision about a legislation which was supposed to have been passed yesterday. So in actual fact, we do not have your normal space and luxury of looking at the broad strategic issues of it. So we would like the questions to be like we have answered now. We are far away from really implementing this register optimally. So I think that is how we should be really answering. We want just so that you can be able to assist us to make a decision. Thank you, Advocate Kabule. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I will start then with the questions, and also others. I'm going to be referring them to the National Registrar to respond. From Honourable Murat Drichen, the question that I will be responding to is on what is the staff component that we have in the registrar, in the office of the National Registrar. We, since 2009, we have been struggling to have the structure, an established structure for this office. And now, as I was saying, that there are, with the coming in of the new DG and us sharing the challenges that we have. So there is a process now in place of taking first, there's already an approval that has been done, an approval to confirm and to appoint 16 personnel that will be joining the NRSO. And we also then have, there are discussions, and actually it's a process that our HR has already started of transferring, identifying people from overpopulated branches who should be coming to the NRSO so that they are properly trained to understand the disciplines of data accuracy in this space. Because this is a register, and any entry that is inaccurate might lead to a civil action. So we need then people who know, you know, those disciplines. So that is a discussion that is already, as I was talking to the head of that branch yesterday, was telling me that they have already started that process of identifying people. So meaning that we are expecting now, currently there's an approval for the appointment of 16 people. And then secondly, in the regions, because now it is centralized, this function, and we want it to be decentralized. And I think that the process that delayed the decentralization is for us going through all those teething challenges that we had. So now in the regions, in terms of the work study that has been done by HR, is that in each region, we will need a capacity of 6 personnel in each region to handle the NRSO. Currently, we have a data capturer for the NRSO, and we also have a director legal that is also monitoring then those entries, and so that the information that comes to the national office is actually accurate. But then we still need, according to the work study that has been done, that 6 personnel in each region. So what it means is that, and then that is with the exclusion of the registrar, because we already have the registrar. So what it means, and I would also like to say to the honorable members that with us, we are focusing on a category, a family of sexual offenses, and not all other crimes that we have in the country. So these are the people then who will be looking at, you know, all those crimes that relate to sexual offenses, and ensuring that then that we maintain the register. So that is basically what I wanted. Then other questions then will be answered by the national register. Tombi, would you please respond to the questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question that I got, it was from Honorable Ngola, and I'm not sure if I missed the other questions, because at the time when the questions were posed from Honorable Drachens, I lost connection. And then when I came back on, it was Honorable Ngola, wherein he was asking which offender detail is contained in the register. The register contains the title, the full names, the surnames of a person, including known alias, nickname, and the applicable profession or trade of that particular person. Because in the event the person is a teacher, there is a form that the system generates, which actually lets the employer know that that particular teacher has been convicted of a sex offense against a child and will not be allowed, you know, to go back in or work with children. So it also has the last known address of that particular person. It has got the identity number. In the event that person is a non-national, it has got a passport number, a driver's license, where applicable, and the type of sexual offense that has been committed against a child or a person who's mentally disabled. And then it has got a fingerprint number, which is a compulsory field, just like what Advocate Kambula was saying. We take into account the fingerprint number, because if it doesn't have the fingerprint number, the system doesn't accept the entry. We've got the name of the court where the trial took place and a case number, the court case number. And we have, in the event the victim was probably, you know, violated, we also have the name of the institution or a medical practitioner who has performed that particular process on a victim, which process is done on a J88, and the details of the sexual offense that is allegedly committed against that person. And we have any other particulars that may be prescribed in terms of the act. And also we have the conviction date as well as the sentence date, even if that particular conviction and the sentence took place in a foreign jurisdiction, we record such information. And on the second question, he said, are we able to balance, to maintain the balance between POPI and what is provided in the register? Yes, the information that is currently contained in the register, there is a balance between the Protection of Personal Information Act, because when the act when the court convicts a person of a sexual offense, it has to, in the presence of that particular person, inform that particular person that your details are going to be included in the National Register for Sex Offenders, and the consequences are this. And in the event where an omission occurred, it also have that particular instance where one who is able to know that the omission has occurred must bring the omission to the attention of the court, and the court must, as a result, make such an order. And in terms of the information that is coming through from DCS, DCS, whenever it is sending information of current serving prisoners, they have to also inform those prisoners that they're taking the information to the National Register for Sex Offenders, which consequences are the following: that you may not work with children or people who are mentally disabled in the course of your work or practice or anywhere else. So we are compliant. Whatever information is in the register is fully compliant with the Protection of Personal Information Act. Thank you.
Ntombi, I would also like you to respond to the question of the 10 days standard that is set by the Act. It's a question from Honorable Jackie Mofokeng as to whether we are able to achieve, are you able to achieve the standard of 10 days, that is the turnaround time set by the Act.
Okay. Yeah, currently with the staff component that I have, because it is also on our APP, whatever that is brought through, it is immediately captured in the system and it is brought to me for approval and the issuance of the certificates. So the 10-day period we are able to cover. And it's just that currently we didn't receive much of the applications, which is why we were able to arrest them. When those applications were forwarded through, we were able to deal with them and dispose of them immediately and send them back to the applicant. And sometimes we are able to also do the application of individuals while they stand at the ground floor. We process that immediately and give them the certificate. So we have been largely been able to comply with the 10 days. The ones that are delaying are the ones that are being sent through to us by post, because when they come by post, they have to be sorted out at the registry before they can be delivered to us in the office. So, but once they actually get delivered, they are captured immediately and we approve staying immediately and dispose of them as such. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There is just one more question that I would like to respond to, which is about the integration that we were talking about on the transversal hub by IJS. Yesterday, I was talking with one of the systems developers, and what we agreed upon is that first, because our NRSO is now collecting cases, we can say in the country right now, in terms of the new convictions, we do have a number of children who have been victims of sexual offences, and we also have also a number of persons with mental disabilities who have been the victims of sexual offences. We do have, because we have that repository that is collecting that data. And I would also like to say that in the country currently, there is no other repository that keeps the data that is disaggregated in terms of the types of victims, like the types of disabilities, the age groups, and the number of details that related to the victims of crime, particularly in sexual offences. So what I have said is that because there was a discussion as to do we take out, you know, because now it means that every victim will have to be included. So we agreed that the system must be able then to give us the disaggregated data that will be also be helping us then to say that if one is asking how many blind people have been, I'm making an example, who have been the victims of sexual offences, will be able to give that information. So it's something that but currently we only have data in terms of children and also persons with mental disabilities. Now, coming now to this transversal hub, it is a space that all of us, we should be utilizing, Chairperson. In the country right now, we have the National Register following the global trend. We have the National Register for Sex Offenders. We have the Register for Abuse of Older Persons, which is managed by the Department of Social Development. We also have a National Register for Child Protection. It's called the Child Protection Register. We also have, those are the three registers that we have in the country. So if you look at all these registers, they are dependent on one another. So there must be, because all of us as the managers and the data sources. So we need to have to operate on a platform where we will be able to share this data. Older persons are dependent on us and the Department of Justice to a certain extent for us to give them data in terms of the convictions that they have that are in terms of the older persons. So we are keeping that data, and so the Child Protection Register is also dependent on us to a certain extent. So, and also SAPS, we are also dependent on SAPS. So now with this transversal hub, now all of us will be there, and we are already actually operating on that platform.
So the discussion is, as I'm responding to the question coming from Honorable Jackie Mofokeng as to why SAPS did not say anything about that. So I want to say that the discourse is already there, because now all of the critical stakeholders are already performing on that platform. So we need now to integrate the systems. The systems integration actually is already done. So, but now it's a matter of ensuring now in the areas where we need to share information in terms of what we are talking about, we are able then to get into that space and be able to get the information that you need so as to ensure that we maintain and we manage the data purity. So basically that is it. Now coming to the other question as to why are we getting the information, the historic data from corrections just recently. I would like to say, Chairperson, that in terms of the Act is quite clear in section 15. It sort of requires these stakeholders that they must provide this information. It's three stakeholders, that is SAPS, the Department of Health, and the Department of Corrections. The Act requires them to provide this information to the NRSO, and it says that within 6 months of the operation of the NRSO. So the NRSO started to operate in June 2009. But then our engagement, because we started to engage with them before actually the operation date came. So the challenges that they had was that their systems, data systems, were not fashioned in a way as to give us the specific data that we required. Even SAPS, it took them time to give us this data, but they were the first to give us their data. And I think that they did not give us once, that is the historic data, they gave us two times. And then now corrections then ultimately also succeeded just recently to be able to identify and extrapolate this information that we need. Why? It is because this information has got the age requirement and also has got the mental status requirement. So, and those were the variables that they did not have in their data. So it meant that they have to go manually now from their systems to get us this data. And the retrospectivity application of this provision is 5 years, that is 5 years from the date of the application of the NRSO. So now we are so happy with the data that we have received, and it is there from corrections. But as I'm saying, that it is a data that they had to get using the manual process. So I think that we have actually covered all the questions, unless there is one that we have not, Chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Levo Trahan.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a follow-up question, but perhaps the other lady did not hear me when she disconnected from the meeting. I wanted to know what qualifies a person to have their details removed from the register. I didn't hear an answer for that. And then I would like clarity. Do you mean that the 18,000 cases from Department of Correctional Services goes back to 2009? Because you're talking about 5 years, and so I wasn't sure. So does it go back, the 18,000 cases, does it go back to 2009? And then I'd like to follow up specifically on that. You said the staff that you have now are the data capturers. So how many data capturers do you have in the department of the NRSO or in the unit of the NRSO? How many data capturers do you have? I have one more follow-up question. I'm going to check my notes. Earlier, you had said that the resources have declined. And what did you mean by that? Does it mean, you know, the equipment is not functioning, is, you know, is not available, is not working, etc.? Thank you very, one more, Che. One more quick one. On slide 16, I was looking for the courts because the courts, they directly feed to the NRSO. So I would assume that the Department of Justice feeds, or the court feeds it. And so I assume that was Department of Justice, but I see that the OCJ is actually in that slide. But in the slide you say planned to. So does that mean that you are still planning? Is it still a phase to integrate the OCJ, or what did you mean by that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes. Would you please respond, Dombi?
Yes. What qualifies a person to be removed from the register? We take into account the sentence that was imposed when this person was convicted. For example, if this person has been sentenced to less than 6 months, in the current dispensation, he will be removed after 5 years has lapsed. And when this person has been convicted for sentenced for between 6 but less than 18 months, this person will remain in the register for 7 years before they can qualify to have their names removed. And then another one is the one who has been sentenced to 18 months. 18 months, they will stay for 10 years, and when 10 years has finished, then they will have their details removed from the register. But the one who's above 18 months or has two or more convictions may not qualify to have their names removed. So those are the three categories of persons that can be removed from the register. So the information that was given to us by the Department of Correctional Service, it dates back to as far possible as they can go back, because you will be mindful of the fact that when the act came into account in 2009, they were expected to, within the period of 3 months, give us the information. So this is the information before the amendment of the 5-year period. So which is why they've gone beyond what 5 years, because this is the information for before the amendment was actually accepted or brought into effect by Parliament. The issue that brought the delay with the collation of this data from Department of Correctional Service is because they were still wanting to purify the data with SARS, which took a considerable amount of time for SARS to be able to give them the data and the alignment of systems between SARS and DCS. The data capturers that I have currently, I am left with 3 because the other ones were on contract, and when their contract lapsed, we were struggling to renew the ones that the contract has lapsed because we had already renewed that in the system for more than 2 years. So in terms of the DPSA policies, we are unable to, you know, continuously renew people on contract. So which is why we had to go back again and redo the whole memo for the reappointment of the bigger structure now that can be able to take the capacity that we require, which then answers the slide on why Advocate Kambula said the resources have declined. Is because of the renewal of those particular contracts, which we actually got challenges in renewing them immediately. Now, when we say the courts directly feed into the NRSO, we also refer to the high courts, because in terms of the act, this pertains to clerks of the lower courts as well as registrars of the high courts. When their conviction is made and the order is made, they must forward that through to us. The only challenge with the high court is that because they are now separate and are reporting to the office of the Chief Justice, our systems are not linked. Rather, instead of submitting the court order directly electronically, they send it to us manually, but we receive the information of those orders from the high court as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. One or two questions from my side. Advocate Kambula or Advocate Skosana. Advocate Kambula, you said that you are using a number which is linked to a fingerprint. In a situation where the system is hacked and those numbers are changed, do you have any backup? Advocate Kambula? Or Advocate Skosana?
Thanks, Chairperson. So I'm going to be asking the Chair, the NRSO, to respond to this question, because it is one of the functionalities that are in the register. Ntombi, would you please quickly respond?
Okay. Yes, Chairperson, we do have a backup, because the information is linked to our criminal system, which is directly linked to the court. But as you would have noted, currently, when a case docket is opened at court level, there is a system which is called the ECMS. That ECMS is a system that is utilized by the police as well as the NPA to record the docket that will subsequently feed into the integrated case management system. So the backups are currently linked to the ECMS as well as the ICMS at court level. So when we were doing the paper manual documentation, we could also receive that particular information that has a fingerprint of a person from the SAPS docket, which is why we were able, when the system could not take it because it's fabricated or somehow, would then go back to the case docket where this particular information is recorded. So the recording of a fingerprint actually takes place at SAPS as well as NPA. So when the docket comes through to the Department of Justice, it has already been captured at SAPS level and the prosecutor's level. So it comes as an information that is complete and worthy of being processed by the ICMS now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mfokeng is being load shedded, so we might not see her. But we are about to conclude our engagement. I would just ask you, Advocate Skosana, Advocate Kambula, Major General Mangele, and his team, just one question. Both, I would expect both teams to respond. If you were in our situation, having heard both presentations from the SAPS, from the Department of Justice, what would you do? How would you approach this issue of the register? Maybe let's start with the police, because they had an opportunity to listen to justice.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, the Honorable Chair. Well, the South African police said this is responsible for administration of criminal records. The South African Police Services is responsible for administration of criminal records, which criminal records include sexual offenders. Of course, we have not necessarily administrating the sex offense register, but from our side, we have been in collaboration with the registrar attempting to compatibilize or partition the sex offenders relating to children and mentally disabled persons to assist the registrar when they are doing clearances for removals processes or the insertion processes. Of course, that part of the interface is not done. There's a lot of dependency from both sides, but I can say with confidence that we have been ready. We are ready in terms of administration of the criminal record in general, and we will have to get the requirements if we want to commit whether we can consume this because we were presenting to the committee specifically focusing on the vetting processes, excluding the insertion or the administration thereof. But I can confirm two things. We've got criminal record systems that house the outcome of the courts and which the identification of such criminal records is based on a fingerprint. Thus, perhaps the registrar is making reference of a fingerprint number. It's for easy reference when they refer something to us, that also for interfacing in future that we can use that the fingerprint to make cross reference with the entry into in the register, because it will not necessarily that the number, the fingerprint number will be the register number for a person, but it can be a cross reference number that the two can use. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General. Thank you for the response, Justice.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will take the last bite or the first bite before my principals proceed. When I'm in your position as Parliament, I would leave the register where it is currently. Reasons being, you already know what the challenges that are with the implementation of this current register, and you have the department that is currently saying that we are aware of these challenges. We have placed interventions in place to make this register improve, to make this register work. And number two, I would look also into the mandate of that particular department where I am taking the register to. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development currently administers the Sexual Offences Act as a whole, as a collective. And through the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act and in the National Policy Framework, this is where you find the National Register for Sex Offenders housed as the cornerstone of being able to implement that particular Sexual Offences Act. And again, I would also look into why we as Parliament are requested to look into this particular bill before us, which says extend the scope, probably maybe make the register accessible to people. How do we then ensure that the victims of sexual offenses as a whole are actually protected? So in the way in which we as the Department of Justice administer this particular register is because we've got a clear focused approach on the management and implementation of the register as it is housed in the Department of Justice. We have a clear focus in monitoring what goes into the register and what doesn't. For example, I'll simply just give that principle where an omission has occurred in court. Only the Department of Justice, through the implementation of the register, can be able to say there has been this particular person who ought to have been in the register but was not included in the register. Please make sure that that particular person is included in the register. And the register in its current form, with its current challenges, is also able to see the sentencing trends and the conviction trends in each and every province. For example, you will have one province having, you know, the courts that are actually giving a slap in the wrist for the pedophiles, like a 6-year-old who has actually sexually assaulted a 2-year-old. And you will see the sentencing trends going to the suspended sentence, wholly suspended for that time, is because our focus area in the implementation of the register basically looks into all those nitty-gritties that goes on into seeing, you know, what sentencing trends, like what Advocate Kambula has said, it is a repository. And then when we look into the world trends, the National Register for Sex Offenders can be housed, you know, wherever it is housed, maybe the Department of Justice, it is for it to achieve a particular purpose, which is the protection of the victims of sexual offenses. Now, in our state, it will be to protect the children and people who are mentally disabled. And I would like to think and believe that the reason they said go and extend the scope to include is because they realize that there is a potential of actually making that register work in future, that register achieve what it seeks to achieve. And lastly, when they say the register gives a false sense of protection, I would like to argue to the contrary and saying it gives a real sense of protection, especially as it protects the children. I mean, especially as it protects those particular categories of persons that it seeks to protect. If we can give it necessary resources and resourcing it, you will see it soar to greater heights. With that, Chairperson, I would like to thank you for the opportunity. Thank you so much. I would leave to Advocate Kambula as well as Advocate Kosana. Thank you.
Advocate Kambula, come after you. Can you just, yes?
Thank you, Chairperson. This is actually an extremely difficult space for the committee to decide. But I would like just to say that as a department, our standpoint is what we would like to see is for our country to have a repository that will be benefiting particularly the gender-based violence categories of victims. Our president announced that GBVF is a second pandemic for the country, and we have been labeled globally that we are the capital of sexual offenses and also of femicide. That is the reason that UN in 2026 requested us as a country to put together a femicide watch. There's a global trend now that there be separate repository for all cases or cases that relate to GBVF, the primary ones. So that is why our country followed that trend, by establishing the National Register for Sex Offenders. It is also for that reason that Parliament also followed suit when they were reviewing the Children's Act to say, to have a provision there that also establishes the Child Protection Register. And we also see it now in the Older Persons Act, which is now also being amended. It also makes provision for a repository, a register for to capture all types of abuses, the data that relates to all kinds of abuses of our older population. And the reason for that, it is because the whole globe is still looking for solutions as to how do we deal with GBVF. There's not a single country that has come with an antidote to GBVF. We are all struggling and moving forward with different programs, international best practice models, so as to deal with this issue. And so is South Africa. And South Africa has also been considered, particularly by AU, as a country that comes with leading edge interventions in this area. So the NRSO is considered as such globally, and also by Africa, that there is a country that has a repository. When you are talking then, why the repository? It is because, why is it necessary in GBVF space? It is because, since we are all in the globe looking for a solution, we need to have repository that will support the research initiatives. Because without the research initiatives that are guided by numerals, we will not be able to know what we are dealing with. And secondly, we need to have different and dedicated repository that will provide the offender and the victim profiling. We need a space that we know that a space of a repository that will be giving us, you know, learning experiences and assist us then to be able to analyze and understand as to how do we stop a GBVF from our country. How can we have a country where women can walk freely without fear of being raped and victimized and all the experiences that they have been experiencing? And also, we need to have a repository that is not found in the midst of a system that carries all criminal cases. We are not about all criminal cases. We are about finding a solution that is wiping off the female population of our country and traumatizing the female population of our country and also our children. So if we have these aggregated data systems, we will be able to use them for administrative purposes, to assist us in appropriating programming, because as we are in a mode of interventions right now, so we need to come up with appropriate, we are a country that's got an innumerable programs. It is because we are unable to have proper figures that will be directing us to come up with appropriate programming, that is prevention programming, response programming, support and care programming. It needs data. It needs us to be, those programs, they need to be informed by a particular set of numerals where we'll be able to do the proper profiling. And secondly, We have been hit hard by COVID-19. So what it means is that we need then to be cautious in terms of where we are channeling our resources. So if you have a set of statistics that talks to what you want to deal with, so we will be able then to channel those resources where they are needed most, in provinces where they are needed most, and most importantly, we'll be able to understand the magnitude of sex offending in the country. And because the whole globe is looking at us as what is it that we are doing? Because the information is already out there that says that South Africa, you are the capital of sexual offenses. You are the capital of rape. That's what they are saying. You are the capital of rape. So now, if it is learned that the register now...
Can we conclude on Advocate Kambule? Because we still have Advocate Skosana to speak.
Okay, thank you. So what I would say is that it's a progressive step that has been taken. And in our response here, we said that we have ultimately achieved after long, many interventions to get to a point where we have a purity of the data. The only thing that we need is to have more resources, human resources, so that we have a data system that is particularly for sexual offenses. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Advocate Skosana.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not going to take more than half of what Dr. Gambula's time has taken. If I was in a court, I would deserve judgment. And I deserve judgment and call for more information on this matter. But Chair, I think just two points. One, I think you have asked a question, whether justice is taking fingerprints or that being taken by the police. The IJS model, in its ideal form, the police must not be taking fingerprints. The repository of all fingerprints, whether in the biometrics, must be Home Affairs, because Home Affairs at any given time must know who are the citizens, where are they, who come to the country, who lives, who has visited, who has overstayed. The fact that police and everybody else have their own biometrics and fingerprints basically points to the IJS, which has not come to its own fruition. The idea was that once the police arrest an accused person, when they arrest, they should basically just by putting on the biometrics, every system should come on the radar, and everyone in the value chain must get the details of the person address whatever. But we are not there yet. Police are advanced because they have created an opportunity to create those systems and those capacities, whatever, etc. Police have managed this function over the years of criminal records, whatever, although it is not in terms of the act, it's in terms of old criminal recording, whatever. So somebody may argue that for them to revamp whatever and get new functions may be easier than, because they've got footprints in the provinces, in the police stations than we have in terms of our courts and the regions, whatever. Somebody may argue that they can do quicker and faster, etc. Convert in parliament, we still have to go down and establish those footprints, whatever, etc. But I think the register must be located within the whole scope of the act. It's not on the register, and I think it's also in terms of the department's, the government's approach towards the whole GBVF regime and how it needs to specify. And when you look at it, when you look at the global picture, it's not mainly about keeping a register. It's also about analyzing the information, looking at the trends, doing research, advising policy, informing the implementation of legislation, advising the sentencing trends, whatever, etc. So when you look at that, it's basically beyond the scope of one single department and more special police, whatever. It's broad. The scope is broad. So if it goes to the police, they're basically perfect the actual information, the register. But in terms of decision making around who should name should be expanded from the register, around all those aspects that are connected, whatever, you'll find that it will have then other capacity challenges over the space, whatever. So, Chair, I think my suggestion is that wherever it's located, there is a need to revamp the functionality and the role of the register so that the powers and role of the register are sacrosanct in the Act, not basically dependent on the National Commissioner or the Director General. Large of the part of the non-function of the register is the fact that its function, despite of its significance, is located within the broader spectrum of the department and the DG and court services. Now, we don't have answers why we have not created capacity when we had budget. If we could lose budget from 2008 to when we could have created permanent structures, whatever. The fact that we're still running on temporary capacity and we're making commitments to parliament that we're going to ship people from other areas, going to train them, whatever, etc. It's basically a panic button, but it's not also a good justification that they should stay with the department. All I'm just saying that wherever it stays, I think the focus should be how is this functionality being revamped in a manner that the registrar, as a critical component, can manage this function and be accountable to the minister and to parliament in a more broader space than it is. And the two things which came clear today is that both departments want capacity, and they raised the issue of capacity. Department of subs wants 90 million, between 22 and 90 million, just 28 million. Now, if there was a decision which would take this process forward, is to make sure that whatever capacity is assigned to this process is channeled towards strengthening the administration of the Act and the register, so that at the end of the day, the objective of the Act are being achieved. And I can just say that the responsible minister, in terms of articulating what's happened in the value chain and what's happened in the judicial space, how do you manage the issue of non-compliance by judge masters, whatever. The responsible minister can only bring those full spectrum across all the justice, all the ministers and the civil cluster, the Minister of Justice, mainly because that minister is responsible for the Administration of Justice, as well as the Criminal Procedure Act, which touches all aspects from arrest, prosecution, and integration, whatever, etc. And all these are contributory factors. Now, police and functions of the ministries powers from the Constitution may not extend beyond the whole issue of keeping the numbers right in the register and doing the expungement, and they may not extend to issue of analysis, whatever. So, Chair, briefly, I would basically take the view that the committee not to take decision based on what the two departments submitted. They take the information that they've submitted and basically they subject their own process, which will allow them to come with an informed decision, and not to be not to focus mainly where it's located, but to focus wherever it's located, how best must it function in relation to parliament's oversight powers and all the other entities, whatever, and the Minister of Justice to remain responsible in the space. I can leave it there. I know I've complicated it more than can answer to the Chair, but this justifies a reserve judgment from the committee. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Advocate Skosana. I think that was helpful. I will start by just narrating a story that we were told as young people in the ANC Youth League by one old commander of the MK. He said they, at some point, they planned a very big operation to infiltrate an MK soldier from Mozambique to South Africa to do some work in the country. So the plan was done over months. There was thorough application of mind in planning the operation, and everything was in place. Everything that they thought that was necessary for the successful implementation of the plan was in place. Then this soldier, this MK soldier, was supposed to have departed Mozambique a night, on a particular night, to infiltrate the borders of South Africa. And everything was in place. On the day, in fact, on that night, when this soldier now, this MK soldier, was supposed to depart, they forgot one thing, that in order to evade the border policing, and they needed to take a particular route, and it was the only route. And for them to do that, they needed a bicycle. The bicycle was organized. Now, few minutes before the operation was supposed to take place, everything was in place, the bicycle was there, they discovered one major issue, that this person that they have been trusting so much for all these months when they were planning this operation could not ride a bicycle. And it was too late to teach him how to ride a bicycle. So all those years of planning came to zero. We should think about that. Because we do appreciate the endeavors, the good endeavors, and all the lofty ideas. But it must come to one thing. Will all these things be effective? Will it be effective? We have had this register, as Advocate Kosana correctly points it out, since 2008, 2009. It has not been optimal. So what I suggest that we need to do in the meantime, since we are going on recess, especially the officials, we would need justice, police, home affairs, social development. You just sit, including with the drafters of the Department of Justice, to say honestly, without looking at, as Advocate Kosana is putting it correctly, without looking at parochial needs of your department, what will best serve South Africa? And come up with something that is much more tangible, given the challenges we have. Because part of the problem, which we should have asked you, and I think we forgot to ask you, is that you said that you have made global comparisons with which countries? Because there's also a challenge when you do global comparisons and just exporting issues of developed countries to a developing country. Wanting to have a Rolls-Royce solutions to a problem that needs a Toyota Corolla. So we need one. Both registrars have got strengths and weaknesses, and they were correctly articulated here. But given all the strengths and weaknesses, we have currently we have a pandemic. What is going to work and work effectively and work soon? We might even have to adopt an immediate medium to long-term approach. So we would want to have all of those suggestions properly developed, because this is an intervention to save South African women, children, and people with disability. It's not a departmental achievement. It is something that is supposed to serve the nation as a whole. So I think go out and show that all the departments that are required are thoroughly consulted and bring something something much more better, something that can work in the immediate, and ensure that you also consult with the legal drafters of the Department of Justice. We want something that is going to work. There is no point of being hailed all over the globe for something that is not working at home. So we need something that is going to work within our constrained fiscal environment. So that is also important. That is also important given our own constrained fiscal environment. We need something that is going to work. At some point, we will come back and have Advocate Kambule, Advocate Kosane, to tell us how does it work that you have a program that is implemented over a period of 12 years, and after 12 years, we still say we are far from being optimal, if not perfect, far from being optimal. What has been the opportunity cost over this long period of time? I mean, if it has the project, the program or the project has to work at least optimally, I'm not convinced that the resources that have been splashed out here are the true reflection of the resources that are needed. So you might have, you might be wanting a Rolls Royce, but with a budget of 50 rands. And the conclusion is that you might never be able to get it. So we need that you interact, you break all these barriers amongst yourselves, and you ensure that you bring something we can work on. So Advocate Kosana's reserve judgment, by the time you come back, we must not be in a, we must not be in a position to have a reserved judgment.
Chair, we can't hear you. Chairperson, we can't hear you. Sia, chairperson is missing.
Yes, honorable members and colleagues. I think the chair got cut off. I note that the time is 2 o'clock. Maybe load shedding is starting at 2 from his side. So let me just quickly try and get a hold of him, and I'll come back to members in the meeting.
Yes, because he was wrapping up anyway. We will just wait. Yeah.
Okay. And try and get a hold of it.
Thank you.
Honorable Mofokeng. Honorable Mofokeng. It's Honorable Wilma. She's just experienced load shedding unexpectedly. So I think I will log off. Perhaps Honorable Mofokeng could close the meeting, if that's possible.
I think the chairperson was done, but let us hear from Sia to tell us, because I know that he was already done with the presentation and also the closing remarks. The only thing that I don't know what was going to be the plan, but it seems as if the chairperson will wish that they return, but it will be with specifications. And so I think that is what we can check on there, noting that the parliament processes of the house sitting will start at 3 o'clock. So we need to also take a break. Let us just give a minute or two and see if Sia can guide us on that.
Members and colleagues, I've just spoken to the chair. He's been disconnected due to load shedding, but he's saying he got disconnected just as he was about to say the meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
So, yeah, so.
No, it's fine. I think we have that, but
Sia,
I think something that will be communicated is that the chairperson might need another maybe presentation, but it will be specific, as he was saying that on the gender-based violence, we need to take a decision on how the system should work. So I think we'll leave it on that. And I would like to thank everyone that is on the platform, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.